Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to episode 117 of Geek Town Radio. This week I have with me Andrew.
Hello, everybody.
How you doing?
Doing fine, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good, good.
What have you been up to the last few weeks?
Well, last week particularly, and a certain percentage of the population will sympathise with me, it's been half term.
Yes.
Which means I've been not watching any of the things that I want to watch. I've been watching, I think I've seen Robots 3 times. Ice Age at least twice. So yeah, if we want to talk about those, I'm definitely not up for that.
No more Star Wars.
No more Star Wars, no. We're on Return of the Jedi, which we're on for the second time now, because the first time round, as with the other ones, it has to keep getting paused to explain, well... to explain lots of things.
Yes.
So then the second run each time tends to be the one where the kids can watch it all the way through.
Yes, right.
But my daughter, who's 4, now has a Darth Vader dress with a Darth Vader mask, and it's verging on one of the cutest things you've ever seen.
That's awesome.
It's very cool. It's very cool. But she does still believe that I'm her father, so that's all good.
Yes, that's the important thing.
I've not had any hands chopped off or anything. So we're all fine.
Yes, also so, quite useful.
So that's me. I mean, we'll come to some of the titles later, but as I say, there's a couple of programs that are really on my list, being The Handmaid's Tale and Fargo, which both started during half term and are both sitting waiting on my TiVo box for me to catch up on.
So right.
We'll cover those later on.
I mean, there has been quite a lot of new shows, surprising amount of new shows actually starting the last couple of weeks, because we didn't do a full show last week. So, and also we've had the finales for Flash, Arrow and Supergirl as well landed this week, each ending in slightly different places. Flash ended up with Barry kind of leaving again. So that's going to be interesting to see where they bring that back. Arrow ended by blowing up pretty much half the team or most of the team. So that gives them an excuse to have some people dead and some people come back alive. When we actually spoke to them at Comic-Con last week, none of them actually knew who was coming back and who wasn't. So yeah, that's kind of interesting for them.
Tell me something, and it may be a question on the lips of some other people that don't follow these joined up shows as closely. If they are generally considered to run concurrently, the DC ones, yeah, why are we talking about the finales of 3 of them, but not the finale of Legends of Tomorrow?
Legends runs slightly shorter season than the others. So
right.
Legends, I think, ran 16 episodes, not a full 22 or 23, whatever the others run. So that actually finished a few weeks back, and it kind of does its own thing. I mean, there is a little bit of a crossover with the others. You know, they do introduce them into some of the crossover episodes. But because you're dealing with time travel and stuff, it sort of sits outside the timeline of the other shows quite a lot more.
Right.
So that's why we're only really dealing with 3 of them.
Okay, makes sense. Makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, all 3 worked pretty well. You know, I mean, I still really enjoy Flash. I have to say Legends, I think, out of all of them, is still my favourite show, because it's just silly and nuts.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that.
But yeah, so I've been enjoying those. They're all back in September. There is a new show, of course, joining them, which is Black Lightning, which it looks like is probably may not start until the new year. We don't know exactly how that's going to be scheduled yet, but that I'm assuming will end up on Skywarn as well at some point. So,
and we'll have the inevitable questions about crossovers and things linking up. And of course, if it doesn't go to Skywarn, then that, as the pool of shows that are joined grows and continues to grow, linking them up and dealing with crossovers and things becomes more and more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, technically Black Lightning isn't a crossover show because it's supposed to not be set in the same universe, although I rather speculate that won't last more than a season before they end up folding it in. But because it is on the CW still, I'm hoping that Sky One will also pick it up and, you know, it will run alongside the others, but we'll have to wait and see.
That's what, five different shows now. They might start wondering about their own scheduling and making sure that they're not just becoming the DC channel.
Yeah, well, there is a certain amount of that. I mean, they have also got a Titans show coming as well, but that's not going to be on CW. It's going to be on this new DC Digital service. And we don't know yet whether that DC Digital service is going to be US only or whether it's going to be worldwide. If it ends up being worldwide, then, you know, that's fine, because, I mean, it's something else you're going to have to pay for, but at least, you know, there's no problem with getting it at the same time as the US, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Other new shows, we've got House of Cards started again this week, which is a
tremendous program.
Yeah, just as tremendous as ever. Wonderful acting from the two leads. It's just brilliant, and it does it so well. So more of the same, just politicians in America being evil to each other. It's great.
This is now the fifth season now, isn't it?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, and obviously the original one only had three, and one wonders how long this one will go on.
Yeah.
We wonder if the ending will be the same as the British one.
Yes, I do wonder at that. I suspect it may be, but we'll see where it goes. I get the feeling it maybe have a couple more seasons in it, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. I don't think Netflix will be in any great hurry to stop it, I wouldn't have thought, because it is a big tentpole show for them. So
yeah, and it makes money.
Yes, and I'm sure it does make money. American Gods as well, which is on its, what, third or fourth episode now? I think the fourth or fifth maybe tonight, I can't remember. But I'm loving. It's just monumental, weird, wonderful show. Very much in the vein of something like Preacher, not quite as screwy as something like Legion, but
very, very few are.
Exactly. So that's been just endless, joyous fun to watch. I'm really enjoying that. And Handmaiden's Tale, as you mentioned earlier, which you said you've not started yet.
No, to be honest, when it first popped onto the radar, the title makes it sound like a British-made costume drama.
Yeah.
And of course, it is a little bit different to that.
Yeah, I mean, it does have slightly a feel of a costume drama because, you know, it's set in a kind of alternative modern America where the birth rate has dropped. So these handmaids are sequestered and forced to work in the houses of rich people and give birth to children for them, for the rich wives that have lost the ability to have children. So that's the sort of basic premise for it. But and it's sort of this religious-ish society. So it's fascinating, particularly with everything that going on in America at the moment. It's something. It's a really well done. It reminds me very much of something like Man in the High Castle. That sort of weird alternate history thing.
Yeah, and yet with high production values. And it's funny because in my little piece of paper in front of me, you literally just mentioned it, Man in the High Castle. As we jump from one show to the next, it says here, ask Dave when Man in the High Castle is.
Man in the High Castle is, hang on a second, I will do a quick look.
Because while you're doing that, and obviously in the vein of that sort of thing, these kind of programs with their very high production values and topics and themes that are a bit different to your standard 24 episode stuff, it really makes TV watching these days fascinatingly interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it should be back in the winter at some point, and unless there's any reason they've moved it. But it's been November the first year, it was December last year, so I would think it will be December if it doesn't get pushed to January, but it will be towards the end of the year at some point. That should be back for Man in the High Castle. But
like that one.
Yeah, it's a great show, that. But yeah, Handmaid's Tale is I keep on saying Handmaidens, but it's Handmaid's Tale. That's running on Channel 4 at the moment. Well worth watching if you haven't caught it yet. It's a really interesting show. So I'm looking forward. I'm two episodes into that. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. Fargo, I have started watching, but haven't got all the way through the first episode yet because other things got in the way. But I'm enjoying what I'm seeing so far. That's been really good. Mm-hmm. Ewan McGregor is pretty much unrecognizable in one of the two main roles. Oh, that he well, plays.
I've seen the promo shots, and that's probably not much of a spoiler because they are out there. But the bald character,
yeah.
Have to look very closely to recognize Ewan McGregor in there.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And they do feel like two very, very different characters. His accent slightly slips into Scottish in places from his from the accent that he's supposed to be playing. But, you know, I think we can forgive him for that.
Definitely.
The other thing I watched this week was a stand-up comedy, because there's some great stand-up comedy on Netflix. And Hasan Minhaj, who is one of the correspondents on The Daily Show, who's got his own Netflix comedy stand-up special called Homecoming King. If you're looking for a good stand-up comedy special to watch, go and watch that one. It's really good. Very funny, but very touching in places. It's sort of talking about being an American-born son of an immigrant and sort of dealing with living in a small town in California. It flips very easily from being, you know, hilariously funny to suddenly smacking you in the face with something quite heartfelt. And it's just very well put together, but really good stand-up comedy special if you're looking for some comedy to go and watch. So that's all the stuff I've been doing this week. Anything else from your side?
Not serial form. And obviously, I think it's worth mentioning in terms of television, the One Love Manchester concert that was on last night. I think I read somewhere that it will become the most watched television event in history because of its broadcast TV channels in 50 countries, as well as over Twitter and various other sources on the internet. They're expected to have had an audience of over 1 billion people, which is fairly impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Considering it's put together so quickly as well, it's really...
Very quickly. I mean, I did watch most of it. I had to bite my tongue quite a lot considering the music. Well, most of it was appalling. But of course, that's not the point, is it?
No.
Definitely not the point. It's not meant for people of my age.
Yes, I was going to say, really showing your age there.
Well, I hadn't heard of most of the people for a start, but it was very impressive when Mr. Gallagher waltzed on towards the end. I did enjoy that part very much.
Good, good. I actually haven't seen it yet. I know it's kicking around on iPlayer, so I'm going to go and have a look later on.
Yeah, yeah. I think for the purpose it served, it is absolutely fantastic, and it's not one where really you can criticise the tween type music. So I'll shut up now and we can move on.
All right. Okay, on to some TV and film news. We start off TV and film news this week with some renewal and cancellation stuff. Netflix has cancelled Sense8 after two seasons, which has brought a lot of kind of people posting on the site going, no, why? It seems to have been quite popular, or certainly had a dedicated following with the audience it did had. And it ended on a cliffhanger as well. So it does sound like it's been cancelled and not like naturally come to a conclusion, despite the press release that Netflix announced saying, oh, you know, great drama and that sort of stuff. So my guess is it's just not got the audience, or it's become too expensive to film, because I imagine it is quite complex to put together that show.
Or both, and it's relatively niche, sort of. I mean, it's not a mainstream show particularly.
No. And it was very interesting. I mean, it was very interesting and very different, but I'm not overly surprised it's not lasted more than two seasons.
It just would have been nice if they'd given them a chance to give it an ending properly, which is a constant bugbear of mine, particularly with American output.
Yes. I mean, they may still do that. You know, if there's enough of a backlash to it, they may still allow them, because they did give them a Christmas special. In retrospect, it would have been better to hold that back and give them a decent ending. But, you know, what can you do? Chicago Justice has been cancelled after one season, which, by the sounds of it, it wasn't doing as well as the other Chicago series. And for various financial reasons, they kind of got to the point where they decided that one of them had to go. So, you know, last one in, first one out, I think seemed to be the way of doing it.
Before salaries and everything else starts making it more expensive. So it's actually, that's the opposite reason, isn't it? I'm thinking out loud.
Yeah.
You think you would cancel the most expensive? Well, they must be doing it purely on the numbers.
Problem is the most expensive. There's a mixture of things, actually. I did write a post last week or the week before about this, where they're actually saying that the resale value of a show has become quite important. So with a lot of these sort of, like those sort of network shows where they are procedural things, they become a lot more difficult to sell on to people like Hulu and Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So that reduces their value. They were saying something like, for the first time ever, they're making more money from selling the shows on than they are from the actual advertising of airing the shows on the US network.
That's right, which brings into play the other comment that you made, which is those of us here in what are effectively foreign markets ought to be more careful about watching these shows legitimately, because as we watch them illegally, that only contributes now even more so to an early death for the shows that we like.
Yeah.
So basically the message is, if you steal and pirate programs, then you run the risk of losing them.
Yes, that is very true. There are a number of people that have said that in the US networks this year particularly. And I mean, that's been a much more recent shift.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it was said by the creator of Timeless, where who said that the international market were particularly important in a way of getting them renewed. Mm-hmm. When somebody asked him that question directly, you know, because somebody had said, oh, I went online to find it. And, he said they're vital for our renewal. Following revenue has become a bigger and bigger factor in renewal in American TV shows in recent years. So although your exact audience numbers, you know, it's not like you watching adds to the US audience numbers, but by you watching on a legitimate source in the UK makes it more likely for a UK network to buy it. And because a UK network is more likely to buy it, it means that it makes more money for the US network that own it. So it does make a big difference. So the other thing that we're seeing is a lot more networks buying shows and owning them rather than buying them from a external source. Because we've seen that quite a lot actually with the cancellations this year, is we've mm-hmm. seen a lot of shows which are actually doing reasonable numbers in the US getting dropped for shows which are doing numbers not quite as well in the US. But those shows that were saved, things like Elementary, are owned by the network that's airing them.
Yes.
So it makes quite a big difference. And that's going to be, you know, international audiences are going to be much stronger in, you need to support the shows that are on legitimate sources, because that is going to make a much bigger difference at this point. So it's just worth bearing that in mind when you go and download something. So other things, HBO have renewed Veep for season 7 and Silicon Valley for season 5. But with Silicon Valley, TJ Miller is leaving the show, apparently by mutual agreement with HBO. It seems to have been a storyline thing where they said it sort of came to a natural conclusion of where his character should leave, which is a real shame because TJ Miller's brilliant on that show. But, he's got a lot of other stuff going on. He's got a lot of voiceover work. He appeared in Deadpool last year and has a bigger role in the next Deadpool as well. So, he's not short of things to do, but I'm glad both of those are coming back.
Yeah.
News also popped up today that puts any possible season 2 of Class in a bit more doubt for the BBC Doctor Who spin-off, as Patrick Ness has walked away from writing a second season. And Patrick Ness, unlike a lot of the other shows, Patrick wrote the entire thing. So that's a big spanner in the works if they do want to bring that back for another season. And BBC seem a bit reluctant to bring that back anyway.
It's not insurmountable.
No.
Depending on rights and things. I mean, after all, Star Trek survived without Gene Roddenberry, so it's possible. So watch this space. I think.
Yeah, I mean, they are saying they haven't made a decision either way, as far as we can tell so far. And certainly when we spoke to the cast at Comic-Con last week, they hadn't had a decision either way. But yeah, the fact that Patrick Ness is not going to be involved could be a big problem. And some good news in that Sky Living have picked up How to Get Away with Murder, it seems, from season three, because the first two seasons ran on Universal, but it looks like Sky Living have picked it up from season three. They haven't announced an actual date yet, but it looks like it's coming, which I'm quite happy about because I quite like that show. So be glad to see that back.
Yeah, and there's a small show that a few people might have heard about, Swords and Dragons and stuff, Game of something or other, Game of Thrones. I jest. Game of Thrones, I heard the eighth and final season of that may end up running into 2019 rather than next year.
Yeah.
Which obviously we're not at season seven yet, so it's not imminently a problem, but it's worth bearing in mind.
Because yes.
I think the text was they want to ensure that it goes out in the best possible way rather than rushing it, et cetera, et cetera. Which is understandable.
Yeah, I mean, they have said that. They've also clarified, you know, the thing that they were saying about five possible spin-offs or four possible spin-offs. They've also clarified that in that they're saying that at the moment they are only planning on making one of those, which I think we did say in the original article, that they are actually, you know, they're working on five possible spin-offs, but the chances are only one of those will actually get made. They're just trying to cover as many bases as they can to find the best story possible. So, we'll see where that ends up.
Yeah, and rumours that William Shatner has been cast in the prequel as the Mad King are apparently unfounded.
Although that would be awesome. Moving on to other news, there is some movement on the Uncharted movie, which you're aware of the Uncharted video game?
Yes.
Uncharted has been a huge video game franchise for PlayStation 4, made by Naughty Dog. It's a superb video game franchise. They've been trying to make a movie about it for about 10 years, and they now seem to have settled on a new star, being Tom Holland, him of the new Spider-Man fame, which...
And definitely not, as I keep doing, not to be confused with Tom Hollander, British actor, who's...
That would be very different.
Different age group altogether, very different kind of actor. And yet I keep making that mistake. When Spider-Man was first cast, I thought, you've got to be kidding me.
Yes. No, Tom Holland and Tom Hollander are very different looking people.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing with Tom Holland is he's very young looking for playing Nathan Drake. But the reason for that is they're looking to take a slightly different take on it. Rather than having the kind of fully formed Nathan Drake, this is going to be a young Nathan Drake based on, there's a segment in Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, and there is a section of the game where the player takes control of a younger version of Nathan Drake, and it's when he's 14 years old and first meets Sully, who is the guy that kind of goes on to be his partner in crime, basically. It's going to be based around the meeting of those two people with a young Nathan Drake and a sort of younger version of Sully. That's the idea. I mean, there's been so many people attached to this at various points. David Guggenheim, Eric Warren Singer, David O. Russell have all taken pass at it. The current person attached to direct is Sean Levy, who is the guy behind Night at the Museum and Stranger Things. So they're looking to him to bring on new writer and Sean Levy to direct it. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether they can actually pull that off, because it has been in development hell for an awful long time, that film.
Rather like Assassin's Creed. And I think, as exciting as these always sound, I remember being fascinated at the fact that Doom was getting made into a film.
Yeah.
Have we ever seen any films, any great films that have been made from computer games? Because they tend to fall rather flat.
Yeah, they do. It's incredibly rare that I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't exactly think of one.
No.
So I don't know, but yeah, you never know. One of them's got to break the mold.
Absolutely.
Thought it'd be World of Warcraft, but I heard that fell flat as well. So, you know. So next up, sticking with the Spider-Man connection, they've announced the casting for Venom, which is an upcoming Spider-Man sort of spin-off movie. And it's going to be Mr. Tom Hardy.
So Bane plays Venom.
Yes, Bane will be playing Venom. Venom, for those of you that don't know your Marvel history, first appeared in 1998. It was basically appeared as a black suit that took over Spider-Man. And it then becomes apparent that this new sort of snazzy black and white costume that they had him wearing is actually a sentient alien symbiote. And he eventually manages to kind of rid himself of it. But the suit then falls onto a guy called Eddie Brock, who then becomes Venom and sort of embraces the nastier side of the symbiote. And it's sort of this horrific kind of, you know, large jawed version of a Spider-Man, really. It's going to be interesting with this because they've got a very big star to land the lead. It's what they're calling their Venomverse, which is going to be a bunch of movies which are tangentially related to Spider-Man, but probably won't have Spider-Man in them. Or if they do, they'll be in a kind of minor role. It's really sort of looking at characters around the Spider-Man universe that they have the rights for.
Like Superman and Supergirl.
Kind of, yeah. It's going to be, they're going to be creating this Venom movie, which isn't a co-production with Marvel, so it's not directly connected into the greater Marvel universe at the moment. I'm not entirely sure how this is going to sit, really. But, you know, Tom Hardy is never a bad person to cast in, so I think so.
Nope.
So we'll say. The film's been directed by Ruben Fleischer, who directed Zombieland and Gangster Squad. It's been written by Jeff Pinker, who wrote The Amazing Spider-Man 2. He was also a writer on Fringe and Zoo, that wonderful, silly TV show. And Scott Rosenberg, who also wrote on Zoo and wrote Con Air and High Fidelity as well. So, yeah, interesting mix of people.
Yeah, I'm going back a bit. Am I correct or wrong in saying there was a version of Venom in one of the original Star Wars, what's he called, Spider-Man trilogy?
Yes, there was. There was
not quite the version that's been described here. No, but the same idea, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is very similar. I mean, it was Eddie Brock who is the same person, and that was in Spider-Man 3, in the original Spider-Man trilogy. There was a version of Venom in that, but this is going to be Venom as a sort of much more central role rather than a random bad guy, which he sort of was in that film. Sticking with comic book movies and comic book TV shows, they've got a new TV series based on a comic book and a movie, I guess. They're bringing Sin City, which has been made into two films already, but they're based on Frank Miller's graphic novel. They're making that into a TV series.
Hopefully in colour.
Well, yes. See, this is the interesting thing, because obviously the films made it into a very unique kind of art style, which worked very well for the first movie, but fell flat on its face when they did it for the second one. So,
indeed. And for the longevity of a TV series rather than the one-offness of a film, I think they perhaps need to tone down the art house style and make it a little more mainstream.
Yeah, I suspect they may do something interesting with the art style for it, but I don't think it's going to be full black and white, I wouldn't have thought. Because I think that would struggle a bit. I mean, you know, and to be fair, there's precedent for this because Walking Dead is in colour and the entire comic book is in black and white. So there's no real need to do it that way. But I think you could make something interesting with the art style maybe, but it just doesn't need to be entirely black and white.
Yeah, do the credits in black and white or something.
Yeah, maybe. Or, you know, you could mute the colours in some way. But
the colour palette of Walking Dead, just as you give that as an example, is not.
No, that's very true.
It is also a little, I can't really describe it. How would you would say it's a bit washed out?
Yeah, it's sort of washed out and muted. Yeah, it certainly is. This version has been written by Glenn Mazzara, who previous writing credits include The Walking Dead. He also wrote on The Shield, on Hawthorne, which I think was a Sky One thing, and the Damien TV series based on the Omen movie. Mm. It's been directed by Len Wiseman, the pilot is, who's worked on Underworld, worked on the 2012 version of Total Recall. He worked on Lucifer and Sleepy Hollow. So, yeah, I mean, it's got some interesting people behind it that know their kind of comic book stuff.
And a lot of dark content in the series and the people involved. I mean, the devil's son, Sleepy Hollow, there's a lot of, if that's utilized properly, this has the potential to be particularly wonderful.
I think this could work quite well. The idea will be it won't tread over exactly the same ground as the films, which I think makes sense. So it's not clear whether Marv will actually be the central character, which he was in the movies, whether they're just going to use Sin City or Basin City, which is, you know, where it's set, whether they're going to use that as a sort of backdrop and that will sort of be the central character of it. And because you can almost do this as a kind of anthology series with characters dropping in and out, focusing on bits of different areas of the city, which is sort of what the comic book does, actually. Mm-hmm. Which they're sort of saying, you know, that it will stick closer to the source material, but will introduce original characters and timelines, which is an interesting sort of way that they put it, which does make me think that they're maybe looking at doing it in the way the feel and the way the comic book works, but with new characters. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that.
Definitely.
This is an intriguing one. Also, being a book to TV series thing and had a failed movie behind it, ITV and production company 11th Hour Films are looking to make a TV series out of the Alex Rider novels, which are the hugely popular Anthony Horowitz teenage spy novels. The books are basically follows the story of a teenage Alex who is blackmailed into joining the FBI after his secret agent uncle, who is also his adopted parent, is killed in a car crash.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, completely believable. So he's basically a mix of a sort of James Bond Jr. and a teenage Batman kind of. He's, you know, facing the world with cool gadgets and you know, with a housekeeper that's sort of, you know, actually in this case is American, but, you know, so it's sort of a twist on the whole Batman aesthetic. But I actually think this is quite a good thing to make a TV show out of, because you can do it quite well making it as a weekly TV show. There's 10 books to work from. They're actually talking about starting with the second book rather, because the second book was called Point Blank. The first book was Stormbreaker, which was made into a movie in 1996. So I think they're trying to avoid doing anything with the first book. So my guess is they'll take elements out of that to sort of set the story up, but they're basically using the second book as the starting point. And there are 10 books in the series so far as well, so there's the latest one's just been released, so Anthony Horowitz is still writing it. The TV show is coming from the BAFTA winning writer Guy Burt, who wrote on The Borgias and Bletchley Circle and Tutankhamun. He's going to be doing it. ITV are planning it as a long-running, old-skewed family drama, which, I mean, to me, this sounds like their attempt to steal the Doctor Who audience on a Saturday night again.
That's interesting, because like Doctor Who, this will, I think the success or failure of this will be determined by its ability or otherwise to understand its audience.
Yeah.
And I think Doctor Who's audience is a large swathe of childhood, but one that recognises that parents will be watching with them.
Yeah.
And the risk, I suppose, which is unavoidable given the subject, the source material, the risk is this Alex Rider one ends up being a lot more interesting to one gender and not perhaps so much to the other, which Doctor Who obviously doesn't have that problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They've tried this numerous occasions to try and land something which could go up against Doctor Who. I mean, this is my supposition that that's what they're aiming for.
But yeah.
It just feels like it, because they've tried this numerous times. Primeval.
What was that? I was going to say the thing with the dinosaurs. Primeval.
Yeah, Primeval was the last time they got sort of close to it. There was then a thing with vampire-y kind of things, I seem to remember they did, which lasted one season and didn't go down particularly well. So, I mean, they've tried a few times to land this. And I don't know, I think this is a fairly good starting point, because it's an established brand, so it's got a built-in audience. I think this could potentially work.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll see. I think it's a good shot for them, but we'll see. We'll see what happens with it. No news on when that's likely to turn up and how far into development it is. But yeah, we'll keep you updated as we hear more. And last news story we have this week: Steven Spielberg is bringing back the Animaniacs, by the sounds of it.
Again, the sound of 50% of our listeners going, what's the Animaniacs?
Yes. So Animaniacs, cartoon series, originally ran in 1993 to 1997. It was a sort of animated variety show. It has this huge cast of characters, but they're all linked together by the Warner siblings, who were three sort of bizarre little creatures that live called Yakko, Wakko and Dot. And they lived in the water tower at Warner Brothers Studios, was the premise. And the idea was that each week they managed to escape the water tower, cause havoc, introduce some kind of cartoons and other characters, and then got shoved back in the water tower at the end of the show. So it was brilliantly put together. There were other characters, including Good Feathers, which were a trio of pigeons based on the characters from the Goodfellas film. There was Slappy Squirrel, who was a grumpy cartoon veteran who lived with her annoyingly upbeat nephew called Skippy. And Pinky and the Brain, which was so successful that it got its own spin-off series. It was about sort of one genius mouse and an idiot sidekick who each week tried and failed to take over the world. It was such a good show, though.
It was, and it was one of the few ever, really, that appealed to pretty much every demographic there is. I mean, clearly a kids show, but laugh out loud moments for grown-ups. And also, whilst it probably doesn't appeal or didn't appeal to teenagers that much, it was a staple of your drunken students as yeah. well. It had a very, very cross-section appeal. I'm over the moon to see it come back.
I am too. I mean, just a brilliant, brilliant thing. And the clever thing about it was that thing where, you know, it often parodies things which would go straight over a younger child's yeah. head. You know, yeah. Gilbert and Sullivan operas they parodied, and you know, shows like Friends and Seinfeld, which of course everybody knows now, but were relatively new things, and you know, were sort of growing pop culture things. So they skewered a lot of pop culture stuff as well as these historical kind of references, which just younger kids wouldn't get. And some of the humor in it, I mean, if you go back and watch it, skirted very, very close to the line, but they sort of got away with it. Yeah. So. If they can capture that again, I will be very, very happy.
Definitely. And it's in relatively safe hands with Mr. Spielberg as well.
Yeah, I mean, Spielberg producing the original series created by Tom Ruger, who won, and the show won like 8 daytime Emmys. It won a Peabody Award during its original run. The three Warner sibling characters were apparently based on Tom's children, the personalities of his children, which I thought is fascinating. But yeah,
all of whom are now.
Yeah,
adults.
Yeah, all of whom will now be adults. So it's so looking forward to that bringing back. It's still in early development at the moment, but the reaction to the news has been very, very positive. So I look forward to seeing that back.
Definitely.
With all the news out of the way, let's move on to the interview for this week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week's interview is with writer and producer Joe Malozzi. Joe, you may know from his work on the various Stargate series, but one of the main things he's here to talk to us about is Dark Matter, which is back for its third season on Monday the 12th of June at 8 p.m. on Sci-Fi UK. If you've not seen Dark Matter, it's a great sci-fi show about a crew of people who wake up aboard a spaceship with no memory of who they are or how they got got there. We're now in its third season, so obviously the story has advanced quite a lot on from that. It's a fantastic sci-fi series, well worth watching if you've not caught it yet. You can find the first two seasons on Amazon if you want to go and catch up with it. So we got Joe on to chat a bit about the show opening, where we left the characters, which was in a quite precarious situation at the end of the last season. So talk a bit about that, a bit about Stargate and how he got into writing and that sort of thing. So here's the interview with Joe. We'll see you afterwards with some upcoming shows for next week on TV.
Hello.
Hey, Joe. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. 1 week, actually less than a week to go before the premiere. I'm 1 week away from convening the writer's room for season 4.
Oh, wow. A lot of stuff going on then.
There is, constantly. It's like getting on the merry-go-round and it never ending.
Thank you for spending a bit of time to come on and talk a bit about the show anyway.
Oh, my pleasure.
We've got the new season coming. It starts next Monday, I think, over here.
Right.
And I think we're airing with a double bill as well, which they're doing in the US as well, aren't they? What can you tell me about the upcoming season? Because we kind of left the crew in a bit of a precarious situation when we finished.
We did. Last season, we left our characters off. Well, most of them were either dead or presumed dead with the destruction of the OS-7 space station. And we will pick things up pretty much right where we left off and we find out essentially what happened to our characters. You know, I think last we left, 2, 3, and 6 were scrambling to make their way back to the Marauder. 3 got there early and was greeted by his old nemesis, Commander Neiman, and friends. And he was wavering in and out of consciousness. And when he looked up, he glimpsed someone who looked a lot like the actor Jeff Teravainen, who plays Lieutenant Anders, last seen in episode 202, the episode titled Kill Them All, where he was taken, I think, 2 or 3 shots to the chest. You would think that would put a man down. So I don't know, you know, we saw his ghost or it was just a vision, but we will find out in the premiere. And then we're just going to find out what happened with Nyx, what happened with 5, who was fleeing with Commander Truffaut, and what's left for the android who last we saw was all alone, all by her lonesome on the ship.
yeah. And we've got 4 as well, of course, who was if I remember correctly, last seen stealing the blink drive as well.
4. I believe you mean Ryo Ishida. Yeah. Why, yes. last we left, he had boarded along with his right-hand woman, Hanshira Khan,
yes.
Misaki, and instructed her to use non-lethal force. And she did apparently the opposite, poisoning Nyx and leaving her for dead on the bridge. But as far as he knows, they took back the blink drive. It was a success. He warned the android to get everyone off the space station, presumably with ample time for them to do so, and blew up the space station and hopefully triggering a corporate war that would in turn help him win his war against Pyrrha.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on in that show. And it's much like something like Walking Dead or Game of Thrones. It's a show where nobody's really that safe.
True, true. In fact, actually, last season, season 2 was particularly dark. You know, I went through it with my writing partner a couple of months ago where we kill one off in the premiere and then we bring in a handsome doctor to replace him and he dies in 7 and we introduce Nyx's brother and he dies and then there was a bloodbath at the palace where Ryo executes his coup and kills a bunch of people, including his stepbrother, Inspector Kierkin of the Galactic Authority, played by Chris Holden Reed, in pursuit of the crew of the Raza. He apparently perishes in the destruction of VO7. And then at the end of the season finale, we actually don't know who survives. And hopefully all those questions will be answered in our premiere.
Cool. So are you toning the blood sport down for the for the new season?
I would say what distinguishes this, I've often said I approach each season as though it were an installment in a book series. So book 1 was season 1, which was all about the shipboard mystery and the discovery of their past and the eventual revelation that someone wiped their memories, and the mole in their midst. season two was all about the burgeoning corporate war and their attempt to really go out and take the fight out to the people who are coming after them, the former enemies. They go out, they find out about the Blink Drive. And also this drive led by Six toward redemption that culminates in spectacularly terrible fashion in the finale where, you know, they go out to try to make a difference to save the galaxy, as it were, and presumably they fail. And so that takes us into season three. And amidst this backdrop of corporate war, this fight for redemption, we have on the one hand Six, who has always very, very much been the proponent of doing the right thing, versus now Two, who has to take a step back and think what's best for the crew. And maybe being the good guys may not necessarily be the right thing to do. In fact, actually, that's the title of our first episode, which is that being good is so much harder. I think that's the title. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, and then amidst all that is the fact that we finally have a big bad who happens to be our former ally for now Ryo Ishida, Emperor of Zyron, who has triggered a corporate war, massacred hundreds of people on a space station, presumably killed Nix, we don't know, stolen the Blink Drive. So things are going to get rather dark in that respect with regard to our crew and their former friend.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. You've got some new cast members joining this season as well, haven't you?
Yes. I'll mention three. One is played by an actor, Andrew Moody, the character of Teku Fonse, and we're introduced to him in the premiere. Once Ryo has returned, he's retaking the throne. One of the first things he's going to do is reward those who are loyal to him. And one of the individuals who is loyal to him was his former tutor, Teku, who had been languishing in the palace dungeon since his stepmother assumed control of the throne. And so one of the first things he's going to do is go down and free Teku. And Teku is a very principled man, sort of a philosopher. And his way of looking at rule is going to clash with Masaki. So right off the bat, you're going to have a definite conflict between two of Ryo's most trusted advisors. And that will play out over the course of the season in the palace for as long as that lasts. On board the ship, we'll be introducing two other, guests. I don't call them crew members. They're certainly going to be joining the crew for a little while. One is the character of Adrian Marrow, played by Mishka Thibault. And he is the assistant to Tabor Kalchek, who's played by David Hewlett in the show's first two seasons,
yeah.
Who is their handler, their agent of sorts. Now, Adrian is his assistant who, as soon as the war starts, we're going to learn Tabor sort of cashes in his chips and goes to ground, leaving Adrian essentially running the business. And Adrian is a Tabor wannabe, but is in way over his head. He's a bit of a nerd. He's a pipsqueak. And he is assisted by his bodyguard, a woman by the name of Solara Shockley, who is played by Aisha Issa, who's a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, appropriately enough, and could choke you out. In fact, she demonstrated on me up in the offices, and she is something. And she is Adrian's bodyguard and very capable, no nonsense, and instantly takes a disliking to Three, and the feeling is mutual. So a little of that plays out over the course of season three as well. So those two will be joining us again amidst this backdrop of corporate war. And over in Zyron, Teku is there to, shake things up in the palace, as if, you know, things weren't already fairly shaken there.
Wow. Yeah. So lots going on there. You've actually said there's no new crew regulars out of that, although you will be having some people join, as you mentioned there. So, but no new permanent crew members so far.
So far. Who knows what the future holds?
So you co-created this. Did it start off as a comic book, this, and then the series, and then move into being a TV show?
In fact, no. I was working on the pilot script as far back as Stargate Atlantis.
Right.
And my mind was, once Stargate ends, then I can take Dark Matter out. And Alaska kept on getting picked up and picked up. And then we rolled into Stargate Universe. And I got to thinking, and I got my start in development. And I know that selling an original idea is next to impossible, unless you're J.J. Abrams or really have a connection.
Yeah.
Whereas established properties, books, comic books are very popular. So I approached Dark Horse Comics about turning the script or the idea into a comic book. And so we agreed and we launched. It was a 4-issue arc and we collected it into a trade paperback. And Jay Firestone, who's the president of Prodigy Pictures, took that trade paperback out, the graphic novel, and use that as a visual aid to sell the series. Nice. So the plan worked perfectly. And, you know, the show is on the air right now. We're airing season 3 and hopefully we'll be rolling into season 4 not too long from now.
Do you have an end date set in mind, or maybe not a date, but do you know where you want the show to end up?
Yes, absolutely. One of the nice things about constantly being delayed, like I said, back on Stargate Atlantis, I had the idea for the show, but because Stargate kept on getting picked up and the delays, it allowed me to really focus on the story and the characters. So one of the things you may notice about the show is we will drop little breadcrumbs, little hints along the way that will pay off later on down the road. For instance, back in episode 3 of season 1, there's an instant where the android is about to go out and do a spacewalk, an EVA, and 2 says to her, "You have to come back. We can't do this without you." And the android says, "Well, you can." And the way she says it, I remember being on the boards and some of the fans were like, "Wasn't it strange the way she said, 'You can'? Is she implying something?" And other people were like, no, that was just a delivery. And of course, we find out 6 episodes later in episode 9 that she was referring to the fact that 2 is
enhanced.
What do we call it? Yes, if you will. Yeah. You know, we do a lot of that because we know where we're going. And I have a 5-year plan.
Right.
So season 1, I explained season 1, season 2, season 3 is going to be the corporate war, the big bad. I already know what we're heading into the writer's room to plan season 4. Hopefully we'll get season 4. And I already know how we're going to begin the season. I already know how we're going to end the season. I already know what the major arcs are, character and story for season 4, which will in turn set the stage for season 5, which in my mind will be the final chapter in our story. And again, I already have the season 5, the beginning and end, and the season finale. I even actually have the final sequence and final scene of the series in mind. So I promise fans that we have answers to all the questions, all the big questions, all the burning questions will be answered within that 5-year plan.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I quite like, you're seeing this more and more with TV shows where they are actually planning arcs and you know, are saying, okay, I've got 5 seasons prepared. It's kind of nice that way because you know that there is a definite, or potentially there is a definite endpoint. I mean, I'm sure if sci-fi wanted you to go on, you could do something with that. But I like the fact that there is a stopping point with it.
Yes, definitely. Hopefully, now really, it's just a matter of getting there.
Yeah.
Like I said, we do very well internationally. We do well, really well in Canada on Netflix. You know, we're one of the higher rated shows on sci-fi. So hopefully we'll be back for the 4th and the 5th season and we'll get to finish our story.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, I mean, as you mentioned there, you're based up in Canada. Canada seems to draw quite a lot of these sci-fi genre shows, particularly around Vancouver. Why do you think that is?
2 things I think that is. One is the fact that the Canadian dollar is weaker against the US dollar. So, you know, naturally, it just makes sense, especially for bigger productions like sci-fi.
Yeah.
Secondly, 3 things. Secondly is the fact that we have some of the best visual effects houses anywhere here in Vancouver. In fact, Dark Matter shoots in Toronto, but we make use of a lot of the Vancouver visual effects houses.
Yeah.
So that has a lot to do with it. And then the third thing is, quite frankly, I think the crews here are amazing. You know, very talented people both here in Vancouver and in Toronto where Dark Matter is shot. There's tons of production going on there. I know Star Trek is in Toronto, The Handmaid's Tale is in Toronto, You know, here, Dirk Gently shooting in Vancouver. My friend Robert Cooper actually is the executive producer on the show. You know, they're doing the Richard Morgan series here. So, I mean, it's great. It's very busy. And if you're a fan of genre television, this is the place to be.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of course, all the superhero shows are up there as well, or an awful lot of them anyway.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. Arrow and Flash. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd really love to come over there and have a look around at some point.
Yeah. Vancouver is a nice laid back town, kind of expensive, yeah, but nice. Very nice.
Going on to you a little bit, how did you get into writing and why was it particularly sci-fi that you seem to head towards?
As a kid, I mean, I grew up watching classic Star Trek, which is still, I'm sorry, Jean-Luc, but still my favorite Star Trek, and watching sci-fi movies. Planet of the Apes, one of my favorites, classics. Tim Burton's version, one of my most despised reboots ever. And my mother, sort of wanted to engender this kind of love of reading as well. So I grew up reading a lot of Asimov, a lot of Arthur C. Clarke, a lot of Allison. So basically, my mind was always very much into the sci-fi. And as a kid growing up, I wrote a lot of sci-fi, bad sci-fi genre stuff, you know, horror as well. And then, you know, as growing up, I always used to tell my mother, I want to be a writer. And my mother would say, well, writing isn't really a profession. I mean, you can be a lawyer and maybe you can write on the side or be a doctor. And then, you know, eventually I took a creative writing class with Paul Mully, who eventually became my writing partner. And he said, you know, I was working on a novel and he said, well, why don't you turn it into a screenplay? And so I learned how to the screenplay format, and I transformed this novel, this terrible novel, into an equally terrible screenplay. But at least I learned the format, and we co-wrote a feature together that never got anywhere. And eventually I got my foot in the door writing for animation. And it's one thing that I always, when writers ask me how to get into the business, and there's the obvious way, you really should write a spec pilot, you should write a spec of an existing show. But if you want to get your foot in the door and make money doing it and hone your craft, try animation because they're quite a lot more receptive to new writers. And that's how I got my start. I wrote for animation. I ended up story editing a show for CBS Saturday Morning lineup. Did shows like I developed a show called, I went into development. I developed a show called Caillou, Paddington Bear, Animal Crackers, Little Lulu, Mona the Vampire. And then eventually my partner and I transitioned to teen sitcoms, and we did a show called Student Bodies for 65 episodes. And then from there, we did a bit of one-hour action adventure and then moved our way on up to Stargate. And the nice thing about Stargate was Brad Wright and Robert Cooper, who were the showrunners, were very good about promoting from within. So they invited Paul and I to learn from them. We went into the editing room. We learned how to edit. We learned how to oversee meetings, concept meetings. We learned production. And eventually we worked our way up from co-producers to showrunners. And now we have our own show. In a nutshell, in a very large nutshell, I think it's one of those Filbert nuts. That's the story.
You mentioned Stargate there, of course, which is the other show you're very well known for. Stargate Universe tragically cut short towards the end there. True. I adored basically every iteration of it, but Universe particularly I really like because it was a very different kind of direction to the others. Would you like to see Stargate come back in some way?
I would love to see Stargate come back, and I would love to be involved in any sort of a new series. In fact, actually, I would love to get back together with Brad Wright, Robert Cooper, Carl Binder, Paul, my writing partner. Martin Garrow is busy on Blind Spot, so I don't think he'd be available, but who knows? I would love to get the band back together again. I had I spent 12 years on the franchise, had a great time, you know, and if MGM wanted to do another series, I would hope that they would contact us about doing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I think is ripe for reemergence. It's been off air for a while now, so I think, you know.
It has been a while.
They're starting remaking everything else, so, you know.
Yeah.
Out of all the stuff you've done, is there one particular incident that comes to mind as being particularly special?
Yeah, the things that stand out in my mind, for instance, are when Paul and I were invited to pitch for Stargate, we were told that they had tried other writers that had not worked out and they were looking for staff. And I learned after the fact that Brad and Robert were actually quite tired because they take a lot, as showrunners, you take a lot on yourself. And especially if you're having trouble finding writers, and it's not that they were, you know, the writers were bad, but it's essentially it's a show that's so steeped in mythology. that some you just get it or you don't. And so they liked our outline and we went to script. And I remember Rob telling me the story that they were going, it was the end of, I think, season three, and they were heading to Hawaii for their annual golf trip. And they had one copy of our script and Rob handed it to Brad and Brad was like, I can't read it because if it's a bad script, it's going to ruin my holiday. And I know we're going to have to go back to the drawing board. It's going to, so Rob said, okay, I'll read it. And Rob read it and he just handed it to Brad and said, you can relax. You'll have a good vacation. And so basically that's kind of a nice story to know that that's kind of, we nailed it coming out of the gate. So that one, you know, for instance, that one stands out for me. The goodbyes always stand out. The final days on SG-1, the final days on Atlantis, the final days on Stargate Universe. You know, over 12 years, the cast and crew become like family to you. And I would spend more time with them than I would with my wife at the time. So it's hard to say goodbye. And it's the same thing with Dark Matter now. Every year, it reminds me a lot of Stargate because it's a fun work environment. It's something that Brad and Robert really instilled in us, and this idea that life's too short. People want to come into work. They want to enjoy themselves. You know, you're making television. You know, don't make it difficult for people. Don't be an ass, if you will. And so I really love the fact that when guest stars come to our show, they say, wow, we really love the atmosphere on set. Everybody's so supportive. Everyone's so happy. And I love that. And so that's very much something we learned on Stargate and something that we've continued on Dark Matter. And that's not always the case. In fact, I think that's atypical of a lot of productions, which is sad, but there you go.
Yeah. So two last questions that we always ask people when they come on the show. First of all, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
At the moment, I am watching The Handmaid's Tale. It's funny because when I'm in production, I don't have time to really watch anything. And so basically I lined up Preacher, which I watched first 10 episodes. I've got Fargo season 2 lined up, but The Handmaid's Tale is one that I decided, you know, I'll watch the first episode to see how it is. And after the first episode, I ended up ordering the entire season on iTunes. And it's beautifully shot, beautifully acted, beautifully edited. Shout out to Wendy Hallam Martin, former Dark Matter editor, who's editing on The Handmaid's Tale. Brilliant. And it's a terrific show. It's highly recommended if you haven't watched it yet. Other than that, I'm just reading a lot. I tend to read.
Yeah, I agree with you on The Handmaid's Tale. Just seen 2 episodes of it. It's very good. And if you like Preacher, American Gods, I would recommend as well.
I enjoyed Preacher up until the end of episode 10 when something happened, and then I was like, I mean, it's a great show. I don't want to give it away, but I still have the 3 episodes I think to watch to the end of the season, but the circumstance at the end of episode 10 made me take a break, shall we say.
Okay. And the last question is, if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, and obviously not one you've worked on, which show would it be?
Past, present, and or future. Obviously, future would be a future iteration of Stargate.
Yeah.
Whenever it comes past, you know what? One sci-fi show that I loved, I think an underappreciated gem, was Farscape. I was a big Farscape fan, and I was instrumental or really pushed Ben Browder and Claudia Black for Stargate when they were terrific in the roles.
Yeah.
Farscape would have been a blast to work on, I think. It was certainly a crazy show. And then off the top of my head, I don't know. My favorite show of all time is probably The Sopranos. Being Italian as well, I think I could have lent a great voice to that show. there you go. Farscape, The Sopranos, and whatever future incarnation of Stargate MGM is planning next.
Awesome. Very good picks. Right. I shall let you get back to your day. I know it's early morning over there. So
thank you. Thank you.
But thank you for coming on and spending a little bit of time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me, David.
No problem. Thanks, Joe. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. So that was the interview with Joe Melosi. Hope you really enjoyed that. As we said, it's back with a double bill from 8 p.m. on Monday, the 12th of June. So that's next Monday on Sci-Fi UK. It's got a follow-up show, which is joining it, called After Dark, which is one of those kind of companion shows that does background and talks to the cast and all that sort of thing. So that will be following straight after it, I think, at 10 p.m. The regular slot for the show will be at 9 p.m. but it's opening with this double bill, so it starts at 8 this week. So that's Dark Matter, Season 3, coming to Sci-Fi UK. Here's some other highlights to look forward to next week. Highlights for next week. We've got...
this is highlights, isn't it? Right.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
Given what you're about to say next, I'm just wondering if the word highlight is the right word.
I left this in. I did, because I do edit the highlights sometimes. I left this in because I know how much you love this show.
I do. I love it so much.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills Season 7 comes to Lifetime on the 6th of June at 9 p.m. And I'm sure you will be glued to your TV watching this.
Yeah, nail-bitingly excited about that.
So, yes, 6th of June for that at 9 p.m. Shadowhunters is back for the second half of its season. That's on Netflix at 6th of June, usually there from about 8 p.m. in the morning, 8 a.m. sorry. So that, if you're a fan of Shadowhunters, go back to that. Mock the Week starts its 16th season. That will be returning on BBC Two on the 8th of June at 10 p.m.
It'll be interesting really to see what they're going to do with Mock the Week, because obviously they mock funny news stories. In the last few weeks, the news has not been particularly fun worthy. So it must be very hard work for panel comedians to deal with those kind of things without completely ignoring the fact that they've happened.
Yes. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But you have also got the election, of course, to deal with, and you've also got Donald Trump. So, you know, there are still stuff to cover. Orange is the New Black, fifth season of that, comes on the 9th of June to Netflix. This has been a great show. They've slightly changed the format for this season in that it actually occurs over 3 days for this new season. So it's sort of the aftermath of the events of season 4, which saw a sort of riot break out essentially at the end of the show. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that coming back. I really like that show. I think it wobbled a bit on its third season, but season 4 really pulled it back. I'm looking forward to seeing the fifth season of that. Eighth and final season of Royal Pains comes to the Universal Channel at 5 p.m. on the 10th of June. So if you're a fan of that, you'll probably want to see those. Poldark is back for its third season, back early this year. It's on the 11th of June at 9 p.m. on BBC One. It's one of these shows that everybody's going to go, oh, it's fantastic, and I have never seen a single episode of it. But yeah, it's Aidan Turner back, probably with his shirt off quite a lot, I imagine. That's what I imagine that show is, with sweeping Cornish coastlines. But yes. So
I've seen bits of it, and I can see the appeal, and I think it's very well put together, but it just isn't really my cup of tea.
No, I'm kind of with you there.
Fair enough.
What is my cup of tea is Orphan Black, which is back for its fifth and final season. That's coming to Netflix from the 11th of June. So I've loved the show. I was quite late getting to it, but then kind of binged watched my way through the first three seasons of it. Really enjoyed this show. I'm sort of sad to see it go, but me and Tatiana Maslany can actually have a rest, because playing like five central characters on your own TV show is got to be hard work, I imagine. So
yes, extremely difficult.
It's going to be very weird when she pops up in something else and like, what? There's only one of you. This doesn't make sense. So there's a new show which I will let you pronounce on this.
That's a cop out. It's the Loch.
Yes.
It's the Loch. It's set on the shores of Loch Ness. I probably no monster in the animal sense, but plenty abound in the human sense. It's a murder mystery.
Yes. So that's the Loch. That comes to ITV on the 11th of June at 9 p.m. And Dark Matter, as we spoke about earlier in the interview, Dark Matter Season 3 comes to Sci-Fi UK on the 12th of June at 8 p.m. Have you actually seen this show?
No, I started watching it. For some reason, I didn't follow up on it. I cannot remember why, because it's on its third season now. I don't know.
I really enjoy Dark Matter. It's a great, great series. I'm looking forward to it coming back. So, that's on Sci-Fi UK for its third season on the 12th of June at 8 p.m. That returns. That's starting with a double bill. After that, it will be regularly on at 9 p.m. So, and there is a follow-up show as well, which is called After Dark, which is going to be sort of chatting about things that went on in that episode. So that's airing straight afterwards as well. The Americans is back for its fifth season on ITV Encore. That starts at 10 p.m.
One of the best things on TV, but frustratingly on a weird, obscure channel that's not available everywhere, which is annoying.
Yeah, it is a shame that. But yeah, The Americans, really, really good TV show. It's fifth season, ITV Encore. You can catch some of the earlier seasons, I think, on, I don't know whether they're on Netflix. I'm sure they're on Amazon Prime, though. So
I think they are, and they're certainly available on disc if you...
Yeah,
up to season 3 anyway, and 4 is probably about due on disc if you want to do it that way.
So The American season 5, ITV Encore, 12th of June at 10 p.m. that arrives. The new show called Fearless, starting on ITV on the 12th of June at 9 p.m. that's about a solicitor defending a man accused of murdering a young girl, comes up against the police, MI5, MI6, who don't seem to want her to get to the truth. Interesting. Okay.
Again, perhaps slightly unrealistic, but obviously expecting something rather gritty. Another kind of ITV police murder drama thing.
Yes, they do slightly merge into one, some of those sometimes. So, but yeah, that sounds interesting. Could be one worth watching. And Wynonna Earp is back for its second season on Spike on the 13th of June at 9 p.m, which is the daughter of the legendary Old West lawman Wyatt Earp, who is back in her hometown fighting off ghosts and monsters and criminals and all sorts of other things. So that's quite good fun, that series. But that's back on Spike on the 13th of June at 9 p.m. So that's everything this week, I think.
I mean, it's not strictly TV, but it's definitely geeky. By the time you are listening to this, there will be a whole slew of new Apple products, one would expect. At the time of recording, we are just waiting for the WWDC to start, the keynote speech that introduces every year certainly new software, and rumour has it there will be new hardware products as well.
Yes, which is going to be quite major, because they haven't done any major hardware for a very long time, so particularly if they do updates to the iMacs and things. It's been a while, so it will be interesting to see what happens with that. We will no doubt be covering that on the website.
Definitely.
Which is at geektown.co.uk, which you can also go for TV news throughout the week and the latest airdate information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message in the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown. Lots and lots of videos up there from MCM Comic Con if you want to go and look at those. And on Instagram at Geektown UK. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Fantastic. See you. Bye.